WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, regular engineer, filling in for Al Martin. And you know what? I hope you're outside enjoying the weather with a portable radio, of course, so you keep it tuned in here at WKAR AM 870 and FM 94.5. But we've got really a great show planned for you all today. A lot went on this weekend, and the Detroit Tigers, out of it all, they're 8-4. That's right, top of the AL Central, and they look on fire. A few mishaps when it comes to the pitching rotation there, but not the guys you necessarily expect. We'll talk about that and what could be brewing for the Tigers going forward, because boy, oh boy, do they look good. Also, the Jordan Brand Classic, some of the best high school basketball players in the country had their showcase, and a few potential MSU signees look quite good in the event. We'll talk about how Jaren Jackson Jr. played, Brian Bowen, and of course Brandon McCoy as well. All three of those guys starring in that star-studded event. We'll also talk about the University of Michigan spring game. Quite a contrast, I must say, to the Michigan State spring game just a couple of weeks ago. We'll talk about possible takeaways from that, as well as just the fan enthusiasm, the zeal surrounding that program right now. And then finally, hear about the NBA playoffs. You know, I can't wait for that one. It's been a great, great series so far between all those teams. We'll talk about all that and more. Keep it tuned to AM 870 and FM 94.5. Future of college basketball took to the stage Friday night at the Barclays Center as the Jordan Brand Classic was played with the nation's top high school ballers. Forgotten in the East, 124-116 loss to the West in the Jordan Brand Classic was potential MSU signee and recruit Brandon McCoy's performance. 15 points, 13 boards, 20 minutes. That's a good stat line. McCoy, a 6'11 power forward from Cathedral Catholic in San Diego, is undecided and said he hopes to make a decision this month among his final five of Michigan State, Oregon, UNLV, Arizona, and San Diego State. Jaren Jackson Jr. was a little bit less spectacular. He only had 7 points and 2 rebounds in 20 minutes. But Brian Bowen sure looked worth all the hype. The small forward prodigy scored 26 and hit 6 threes on the night, which was still largely a scrimmage, but he had some interesting comments afterwards. We'll get to that later in the show. The Detroit Tigers went 2-1 over the weekend in Cleveland to continue their hot start to the season. Youngsters Daniel Norris and Matt Boyd picked up victories, while Justin Verlander was shelled for 9 earned runs in Saturday's absolute stomping. It was a good start to the season against last year's AL Central champs as the Tigers, who started last season with 11 consecutive losses to the Tribe, picked it up a little bit. Alex Avila connected on 2 homers over the weekend, and the Tigers have now hit home runs in 12 straight games to open the season, the first to do it since the 07 Rays. Detroit traveled to Tampa last night, and they've got an off day today before beginning a 3-game set with the Rays on Tuesday. And less than a week after signing Danton Cole to be its new head coach, MSU closed the door on the 2016-2017 hockey season with their awards ceremony. The Spartans hosted their annual awards program at the Kellogg Center on Saturday, and senior Joe Cox came out as the big winner, taking home 4 awards. He sure deserved it, too. Sophomore Mason Appleton was named the team's MVP, as well as the most outstanding offensive player. Junior defenseman Carson Gatt was the only other Spartan to take home multiple awards, being named Outstanding Defensive Player and Most Improved. Michigan State senior golfer Charlie Knetzel finished sixth at the Boilermaker Invitational hosted at Purdue University. As a team, the Spartans were tied for 11th in the Big Ten Laden Tournament held at the Campen Golf Course in West Lafayette, Indiana. Saw the Spartans head home with a 44-over and a 9-08 finish. Kent State captured the team title with a 1-over 865 performance. There were seven Big Ten schools at the Boilermaker Invitational, including Purdue, of course, the host team, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Indiana, Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State. The Michigan State women's golf team got its first tournament victory of the season, claiming the Lady Buckeye Invitational Tournament on Sunday in Columbus, Ohio. The Spartans overtook number 20 Texas by one stroke, finishing 25 over par and a team 889 at the OSU Scarlet Course. The Spartans 11 over par, 299 in the final round was the best score of the day. Two shots better than the Longhorns and enough to overtake them for the tournament lead. The Longhorns entered Sunday in first place. Junior Sarah Burnham was the individual runner-up, finishing 2 over par and a 218 after a 72 and 73 in rounds 1 and 2, respectively. Burnham fired a 1 over par 73 on Sunday, tied for the lowest score of the day. More than 57,000 rowdy Big Blue faithful showed up for Michigan's spring game on Saturday, with the Maize and Blue team taking the field against the blue team on a field goal as time expired. Wilton Spate started for QB for the Wolverines, going 9 for 26 for 78 yards. Caron Higdon led the rushing attack for Michigan, finishing the day with 81 yards, and fans saw some defensive scores as well. Safety Jordan Glasgow had a 100-yard interception return for a touchdown, and Brandon Watson also ran one back for 32 yards and a TD there. The Wolverines will head to Rome soon as the team will finish up their spring practices in Italy. Not a bad location, even though the weather up here in mid-Michigan, you can't complain about that either. And the NBA playoffs got underway this weekend, with every series playing their first game. Draymond Green and the Warriors made headlines as they used a big second half to beat the Trailblazers, while LeBron and the Cavs squeaked by the thinnest of margins by the Pacers to win 109-108. The one-seeded Boston Celtics dropped Game 1 to the Bulls, while the Milwaukee Bucks took Game 1 in Toronto in convincing fashion. In other action, the Spurs took Game 1 over the Grizzlies easily. The Wizards beat the Hawks. The Jazz upset the Clippers despite the absence of Rudy Gobert. And James Harden won the matchup with Russell Westbrook as the Rockets took down the Thunder in a second half onslaught. It was also a busy first weekend for the NHL playoffs, with many upsets and overtime goals on the occasion. The Nashville Predators built off their Game 1 victory with a 5-0 blowout victory. Sorry, Jason Ruff, over the Chicago Blackhawks. After taking the first two games on the road, the Preds will look to build a 3-0 lead in the series at home tonight. And in other matchups, the Penguins and Blues took 3-0 leads into the series. Toronto evened up their series with the Capitals after an OT win on Saturday, with the Senators doing the same in their matchup against the Bruins. The Oilers took a 2-1 lead against the Sharks, while Montreal did the same in their series against the Rangers. And lastly, the Anaheim Ducks took a commanding 3-0 lead in their series versus the Flames. Jack Hoiberg, son of Chicago Bulls head coach Fred Hoiberg, who's a happy man this weekend, will be walking on to play basketball, believe it or not, at MSU next season. The point guard from Illinois averaged 15 points per game as a senior and is passing up a golf scholarship, multi-talented kid, to pursue his dream of playing college basketball, not at Purdue, at MSU. Hoiberg will join an incoming class of big men, Jaren Jackson Jr. and Xavier Tillman, and more could be on the way. Should be an exciting year next year for MSU basketball, as I detailed, with just so much going on as well in the realm of recruiting. A lot to see still there. In other news, the LSJ released their hockey dream team for this past year, and some of the player of the year finalists were Jack DeSalto of Okemos with 47 points, 31 goals, and 16 assists. Nico Montrose, Grand Legend, Fowlerville. DJ Putnam for the Capital Area Patriots. And the dream team itself included Dominic Peroni, Sam Linebaugh, Zach Phillips, Brandon Williams, Jacob Bondi, John Hull, Holden Kuhner. And then the all-area team also included Hunter Blaske, Joe Corner, Robert D'Alessandro, Spencer Walmsley, Jack Lufkin, Cameron Van Tighem, Marshall Besko, Cole Hetrick, and Brandon Ostrander. Congrats to all of those young men for their incredible contributions to Mid-Michigan hockey this past year. And then I just got it on my phone right before taking the air. Josh Jackson. He's going pro officially. So Miles Bridges staying, Josh Jackson going, and he's predicted to be the number three overall pick on several mock boards. Chad Ford's number three overall prospect. That wraps it up, though, for your current sports quick hit headliners. If you've got anything to say, anything to weigh in on today's current sports, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also tweet me at Isaac Constance, and we'll make sure to get your comment on the air. But we've got a lot to talk about. Tigers, Brian Bowen, NBA playoffs, Michigan spring game, weekend winners, more and more and more. So keep it listening to WKAR's current sports. We're going to hit our intro for the day and then start the show.
Guys were taking a lot of the technique that they were practicing and using it in the game, and that's kind of what you want to see. Will they do that when they get in game condition? So a lot of good things, no serious injuries, exciting game, good to be done with it.
You have one more practice and then you take your endeavors to Rome. Yeah. What do you hope to accomplish while you are overseas?
I want it to be the greatest experience of our players' lives up until this point. It's going to be a great educational experience.
Did you invite the Pope to practice?
We are going to see. We have tickets to go see the Pope give a papal address on the 26th of April.
And lastly, you're breaking in some new khakis on game day. How do they feel?
Good, good. Yeah. It's a great day for football. Great turnout by our Michigan fans. So, good day.
All right, Jim. Thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Guys.
There you heard Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh right after his team won the game and lost the game, of course. It was a spring game. It's designed to be fun on both sides. It was over the weekend this Saturday in Ann Arbor, and a great attendance. I've got to say, 57,000 showing up for the Maize and Blue, who lost plenty of starters heading in this year. Did not diminish the hype whatsoever. Behind Jim Harbaugh, you heard the sounds of Kendrick Lamar. The new album, Damn, coming out. And of course, you know, on Current Sports, we talk about pop culture inclusive. This is going to go down as a hip-hop classic. Plain and simple. When I heard Kendrick Lamar, and I texted multiple people this over the weekend. He also performed at Coachella, a busy weekend for him. But I said, this is the most mature he sound. I don't want to say he was impetuous sometimes earlier in his career, sometimes too quick start in many ways. He really wanted to get the message out there, and I respect him for it. He was raspy. He was young, still developing his sound. But Kendrick Lamar, in my opinion, has now really fine-tuned that sound. He's perfected it. This album sounds like one that we're going to hear for years and years to come. Not that his old ones weren't, but this one really seems like 20 years from now, people will look back and say, boy, this is what 2010s or late 2010s hip-hop should have sounded like. So Kendrick Lamar, the king of rap right now, not a doubt about it, put out, in my opinion, without a doubt, the 2017 album of the year. And like I said, I just figured it was a good way to start the show because, you know, that we on Current Sports, we like talking pop culture as well. And if you do too, call in 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. We'll get y'all live on air here on 94.5 FM and AM 870. So we've got a lot to talk about, especially in the sports scene, though. You know, we're not going to dodge that responsibility. And you heard me pick it up with the Michigan spring game. We are going to talk about that. But, you know, I mean, where I'm from, New Orleans, we don't have a baseball team. I learned pretty quickly that y'all like your baseball. You really do. Especially when the Detroit Tigers are good and Anibal Sanchez is atrocious. And that's exactly what's going on with the Tigers right now. They're 8-4, second best record in all of baseball, only trailing the Baltimore Orioles. And the Orioles have Trey Mancini with a record tying 7 homers through 12 games. Good for a modern record with Barry Bonds, amongst others. I mean, he's really had one of the quickest starts to the season that I can recall in MLB since I've been watching. But the Tigers, just one game back, 8-4, the second best winning percentage in the league as well. They've allowed 9 or more runs that they've scored over this weekend, against the Indians. They allowed 13. I mean, the Tigers really have given up some big games. They've allowed, 9 more runs than they've scored this season. Not necessarily a differential that you'd equate with being one of the better teams in baseball right now. The thing is, the Tigers have had a couple of collapses this season, and it hadn't been pretty when they have. I mean, the Detroit Tigers, like I mentioned, giving up 13 runs to the Indians, 11 runs to Minnesota, 11 runs to the White Sox. Those aren't great figures necessarily, but at the same, not by any metric, but at the same time, the Tigers have rebounded. And overall, you'd much prefer the one-off game pitching instead of an entire slew of games where the relievers come in and they let you down. I know that sounds familiar to Tigers fans because that's what's been going on these past few seasons. Instead, now you've got a few lapses, and those lapses come on the back of Jordan Zimmermann, Justin Verlander, amongst others. I mean, it's really overall been an effective year for the Tigers so far in the pitching category. The bullpen itself, of course, Bruce Rondon averaging his famous ERA of this season. Now he's in AAA, so he might not even have a chance to rectify this, averaging an ERA of 40. So if the Tigers keep up on that pace, you know, they're set to break quite a few records of their own. But besides Rondon, Anibal Sanchez also not off to the highest of starts. But like I said, the Tigers themselves have managed to overcome a few bad games on the mound. Like I said, they've only lost 4 games on the season. And in 3 of those, they've given up 10 or more runs. Not saying you can live with that, but like I said, if you're going to have an off game, might as well let that be your only loss of the season. The Tigers, time and time again last season, the offense went sputtering. The offense was fine. Miguel Cabrera was still in immaculate form. Ian Kinsler didn't look to have aged that much. When J.D. Martinez returned, the Tigers had such a lethal middle set of the lineup where pitchers just couldn't get through it. The thing is, the Tigers themselves would lose game 7-6. When you score 6 runs, you should win more times than you don't. The Tigers did not. The Tigers would have their games where they gave up 1 or 2 runs on the mound with guys like Michael Fulmer and Justin Verlander pitching in Cy Young form. The Tigers would still manage to lose those games because on that day, the bats wouldn't be working. The Tigers just weren't able to put 2 and 2 together and make for a complete holistic effort from the mound, from the batter's box, wherever they were. They couldn't just piece it together. This year, it's early. And the Tigers, listen, they started 8-5 last year. The Tigers weren't bad last year at the start of the season. They were 7-5 at this point, and they were playing the Royals. It was a pretty good, formidable start to the year for the Detroit Tigers. But the thing is, like I said, later in the season, they started having these lapses on one side of the plate where, you know, sometimes the pitching wasn't working, other times it was the batting that wasn't working, and before you knew it, the Tigers just started losing. If that happens again this year, it won't be because of the start of this season. Like I said, the Tigers have been reliable. Their bats, yeah, they've been working. But at the same time, I mean, they had two 2-1 victories back-to-back versus Boston and versus Minnesota just a week ago from today. The Cleveland Indians, in this series, Tigers took 2-1. They won one game 4-1. They won one game 7-6. I mean, the Tigers, it's not like they've been the ones to put up 10 runs. That's why the differential is 9 between their bats and their pitching. It's because and 9 is a negative figure. 9 is more runs allowed than more runs scored. It's because the Tigers haven't been that explosive offensively. Believe it or not, so far, they've been consistent. But Miguel Cabrera, he's in 220. Nicholas, which he's now going by, and I guess we'll have to get used to it. It's actually kind of fun to say. It rolls off the tongue when you match it with his last name, Nicholas Castellanos, also batting 220 after a record-setting year for himself, a career best last year. Ian Kinsler, 222. All of that doesn't necessarily add up to an 8-4 record. Best in your division, second best in your conference, second best in all of the majors. That doesn't seem to fit. Shoot, McCann, who, you know, if you just watch the highlights, you think, boy, this kid's having a career season. He's got 3 homers already, which, credit to him, that's fantastic. He had 12 home runs last season, batted below 200 for a large portion of it, finished with a 220 average. But McCann's batting 143 this year. It's, you know, he's got the big plays. Justin Upton, he's got the 6 RBIs, 2 homers. Again, he's making the big plays, but has he necessarily been batting lights out? No. Only two players for the Tigers are batting, quote-unquote, lights out, over 300 whatsoever, and that's Tyler Collins and Alex Avila. Alex Avila, famously, with a 7-10 start to the year, which he's the first Tigers player to do that, actually, since Miguel Cabrera in 2009. Bright start for the catcher. The bullpen itself has even showed up a little bit. The Tigers not giving up the late-game runs that typically plague them and not giving up the collapses that typically marks a Tigers team. You see, Francisco Rodriguez, he's had some worries, actually, to start the season. He's got an ERA of 4.50, which isn't necessarily terrible for a closer, but at the same time, he expects better of himself. He's one of the top pitchers in the league, of course, but 5 saves in 6 outings, that's respectable. 9 hits given up so far in those 6 outings. But the real Tigers' strength comes actually earlier in the bullpen so far. And I mentioned that, listen, y'all love it. And I say love it because sometimes you just gotta really wallow in your own misery. Tigers fans, Detroit sports fans, be real. Y'all enjoy doing that. I mean, between the Detroit Lions, the Detroit Tigers, you enjoy kind of giving them hell for underwhelming performances. And I can't blame you for that. You know, it's the same as a Saints fan for me. But this year with the Tigers, you've got Anibal Sanchez stinking up the place in 4 outings. He's got an ERA of 11, giving up 18 hits in 9 innings. That's 2 hits an inning. That's not going to get the job done. He's given up 11 hits in 9 innings. That's more than a run in an inning. Again, not going to get the job done. His handle has been pretty bad. 6 walks already in the year. I mean, Anibal Sanchez has been as bad as you expect. I'm hearing a dialogue swirling around the team that it's time to just cut ties. Anibal Sanchez, a guy who was given a monster contract by the Detroit Tigers just a couple of years ago, it's not like you send him to the minors. He's 33. 11 years in the league. He's not going to get any better at this point. And these past 2 or 3 seasons, he's really just been so abysmal. It might be time to cut ties. And if they let go of Anibal Sanchez, you can hardly blame him for that. Last year, he had an ERA of close to 6. This year, it's at 11. And you're not improving. But the reason why you can afford to let go of Sanchez is because, aside from Bruce Rondon, who's like I said, he's got a career ERA of 4.5. He's a decent pitcher. He's had an awful year so far, but send him to the minors, let him refine his groove, and maybe he recirculates back into the majors for this team. But the thing is, you've got a solid three already at the reliever position who are doing their thing. You see, Wilson, Green, and Wilson, the trio, all come together, and they've been doing fantastic. Justin Wilson has a win, a save, has only walked three batters, struck out eight, hadn't given up a run, has not given up a hit. Justin Wilson has, through 6.1 innings pitched, a cumulative no-hitter on the season. That's what you call dependable. Alex Wilson, I don't believe they're brothers. They're not. But Alex Wilson, six games played for him, six games pitched. He's got a save too. And 14 innings pitched, he's given up 13 hits. He's got an ERA of 3. Solid again. And then you got Shane Green, who was somebody who's been pretty mercurial for the Tigers. He's been up and down since signing on with Detroit. He's had a couple decent ones, but overall, again, not the answer. This season, he's done about all you can ask. Not extensive time on the mounds as 4.1 innings pitched, but he's only given up 4 hits on the season, ERA of 2.1. Again, you'll take it. The Tigers have been, believe it or not, consistent on the mound. And like I said, when they've had a bad day, they've had the worst day of their lives. I mean, Justin Verlander, how many times does he have a performance such as he had on Saturday against the Indians when he got shelled for 9 earned runs? That's an anomaly for Justin Verlander. That's safe to say. You know, when it comes to Jordan Zimmermann, I'm not saying he's going to be great this year. I think actually all signs point towards him having a pretty average showing. But Jordan Zimmermann still, I mean, you know, he had, again, a very awful game. And that's what's ballooning his ERA to a measly 5, or, an, you know, really eye-popping 5 that you can't necessarily have on the grounds. But Verlander, I mean, like I said, you know what you're going to get from him. His first game, he allowed 2 runs on the whole thing against the Chicago White Sox. His second game just gave up 1 to the Red Sox. Yeah, Verlander's going to be okay. What's equally encouraging for the Tigers, and I want to hear your thoughts on it, 517-355-9527, but they have not played a cupcake schedule, not in the slightest, to start this season. The Detroit Tigers, they've already played the Boston Red Sox, taken 2 of 3. Or, excuse me, 3 of 4 against the Red Sox. The White Sox, they split that series. Not White Sox are a special team, but that was a 1-1 series. Cleveland, 2-1 against the Tribe this year. That's a big deal for the Tigers because the Tigers were 4-14 against Cleveland last year. You just can't have that and make the playoffs when you're facing an in-division rival. Now, of course, next up, the Tigers have Tampa. I believe 6-7 right now, and they're facing off against the Red Sox today as we speak. But Tampa, pretty, you know, decent squad, nothing special. The Tigers can keep this momentum rolling after winning 3 consecutive series. And next up, you've got Tampa, Minnesota, Seattle, and then the White Sox again before hitting Cleveland, who, by the way, is having a below-par season. The Tigers are in great shape so far. And like I said, the bats have not been popping. They haven't been cracking to point. And the pitching has had its lapses. The thing is, the Tigers have just managed to put together complete games. They've managed to find their spots and have their on days, have their off days. But as long as you have more on days than off, the Tigers will be in contention for that AL wildcard spot. I don't think they finish off the season winning this division, but at the same time, nothing's impossible in baseball. You see all sorts of surprise teams do it. And like I said, if the Tigers are in position to threaten for the playoffs, expect a big move right at the deadline, because they know that with Miguel Cabrera and Ian Kinsler and Justin Verlander all aging, plus you got your young group of guys on the mound such as Boyd and Fulmer and Norris, they knew that the more veteran leadership and elite positional players you can get, the better off they'll be, the better chance they'll have, and really the only chance they'll have to do anything major on the season. Last thing, I just want to toot my horn actually a little bit, because last season I did get a little bit of flack for saying that I thought Brad Ausmus, and I used quite a superlative. I'm forgetting which one. It might have been excellent, might have been awesome, might have been amazing, but I said simply that he did a really darn good job with this pitching rotation, all things considered, considering the different injuries that were suffered, considering that Justin Verlander was able to last the whole season on consistent form, considering that Michael Fulmer, who of course went on to be a Cy Young contender in the AL, was given the chance almost immediately at the start of the season. I thought Brad Ausmus did an excellent job because he didn't worry about the Anibal Sanchez, who now might be cut, contract. He put it all on the bench. And the bench actually really upped Sanchez's game last year a little bit, even though it was still an awful year for him. It really did help resolve some of the issues the Tigers had with no relievers really on the squad. But also guys like Boyd and Norris, I thought Ausmus did a great job of managing them and making sure that they weren't thrown too much into the fire, but they were still given enough experience so that they could thrive. And what else do you expect? The guy was one of the best catchers of the 21st century in the late 1990s. Brad Ausmus knows how to go about pitching, even if from a managerial standpoint. I think he's done a good job again with that this year. We'll see if it continues. But like I said, Alex Wilson, Justin Wilson, Shane Green, off the pine this year have all been reliable, and the Tigers themselves have looked good. 8-4. What do you think about the season? Do you have any different thoughts from what you started off expecting from the Tigers this year? Of course, it's a long season. I always say, I hate analyzing individual baseball games because I hate analyzing individual football games. And there are 16 of those. If you're going down to college, there are 10, 12 of those, depending on how long your schedule is, if somebody gets canceled or something like that. But football, even a smaller sample size. Basketball, you got 82. Soccer, you got, I think, 38 in the Premier League. Baseball, you have 162. Let's not jump to any conclusions just yet. It's a very small sample size from the season. We've pretty much played the equivalent of one NFL game. But at the same time, it's fun to talk about. So talk about 517-355-9527. 517-355-WKR. We'll be taking your calls. But first, we're going to hit our break for the day. Afterwards, something I haven't seen getting too much attention, the Jordan Brand Classic. Three MSU recruits, one signee, actually performed on the night. We'll talk about how they fared, as well as some interesting comments from one of the top ones. All of that and more coming after this break. Welcome back to WKR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, regular engineer, filling in for Al Martin. He'll be back at the helm of the show tomorrow, and I know he's got a lot to talk about too, because it was such a busy weekend for sports. Between the nice weather, where you go outside and play a little bit, the start of the NBA playoffs, the first weekend of the NHL playoffs, you got the Tigers, of course, finally with the weather to sustain a little bit of a spell of play. And then this story, which really didn't get much attention, and I couldn't believe it, because the Jordan Brand Classic each year is known as one of the more prestigious high school basketball games in the country and invites all the top recruits, even though Michael Porter Jr., the top recruit in the country, who, boy, he's going to be something special, and Washington, just quick tangent, made such a mistake when they decided to go a different route and scare off this prospect. I mean, he was number one again in the nation for a reason. I mean, that's not a bold statement whatsoever. Michael Porter Jr. was a big deal. He's got a bad back, but, you know, pretty much it was the third straight year that the number one player in the nation didn't play. But Washington, by firing their head coach, and I'm blanking on his name right now, but he had basically served that program for something like 19 years. Had an awful year this year, especially with Markelle Fultz, the freshman who captivated the nation and might be the number one overall pick in the draft. Anyway, he recruited Michael Porter Jr. to come to the program. Porter Jr., who I believe his dad was an assistant coach there, pretty much threw up the deuces after they parted ways. And it pretty much sent him more so towards the direction of Missouri. And now he'll be playing there, helping revive that basketball program, which has had its ups and downs. But Michael Porter Jr., pretty much, I think, when you have the number one recruit in the nation and he's somebody of this kid's potential, you keep him around because a small forward like that who's so athletic, so versatile, he's a great passer, he can fly. Kid's got a pretty good-looking jump shot, too, just in terms of form, even though I think it can develop a little bit. You do every single thing in your power to hold on to him. But that didn't mean that there weren't any attractions whatsoever at the Jordan Brand Classic held at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. I mean, you still had plenty of five-stars, couple four-stars taken to the spotlight, including Jaren Jackson Jr., MSU commit and signee. He had a rather pedestrian game, 7 points, 2 rebounds, a block, and a steal for him in 20 minutes. So he actually played as much as the top recruits in the nation, except for PJ Washington. Jaren Jackson just didn't necessarily contribute at the same degree. Then you had Brian Bowen. Of course, his top three is rumored to be, even though I think that there's room for a little bit of fluctuation in there with the returners of Alonzo Trier to Arizona and Miles Bridges, of course, as all of you know, to MSU. Of course, the last school in Brian Bowen's list is Creighton. So it's interesting. I'm really excited to see what this kid does. And I hope, you know, he's from Saginaw, Michigan. And that's basically why Michigan State is such a contender for his signing, even though MSU's got the pieces without him. I mean, it would be pretty much a dangerous pick for him to come to MSU just because they've got Miles Bridges, who's a very similar player. 6'7", 180 is Brian Bowen. Miles Bridges is also a 6'7", small forward who, as I mentioned on Friday's show, has a better jump shot than all of us foresaw. We thought that he'd be more of a drive and alley-oop type guy, but Miles Bridges was so much more than that his freshman season. Brian Bowen brings a lot to the table as well. He had 6 threes in the Jordan Brand Classic, and the reason I'm talking about Bowen so much is, like I said, his signature. So many teams are vying for it, and it's still very much in the air, because between MSU, Arizona, and Creighton, all clearly have their pros and cons, but at the same time, some seem to be more so in his favor for pros, while some seem to be more so in his favor for college. I don't doubt for a second, and I didn't doubt for a second that Miles Bridges was a one and done, but at the same time, you signed Brian Bowen, I think you got him for 1 year, and I think he's taken his jet plane to the NBA, the New York draft room, and all of that good stuff. And again, that's what you expect with a five-star recruit. That's the good and bad of it. But Brian Bowen, after the game, anyway, he had some interesting comments. I'll start off with what he said about Michigan State. Quote, "They've been recruiting me for a very long time now, 4 years coming. Coach Izzo, he's a great guy overall. He's talked to me a lot coming in and being an impact guy. They have Miles coming back now. Miles Bridges, of course, is whom he's referring to. So it'll be a great 1-2 punch right there." Pause. Says other stuff too. I mean, he says, "Just make my hometown proud." As I mentioned, he's from Saginaw, Michigan, and my home state proud as well. But him saying, with Miles Bridges, they have a great 1-2 punch right there. That's an interesting way to look at it. When Miles Bridges re-signed, pretty much the only dark lining in that, I suppose, was that everybody said, okay, well, Bowen's probably going to Arizona or he's going to Creighton. That's a good perspective, though. If he says that they could have a great 1-2 punch, it's a lot different than what many MSU fans perceived, which was, so this kid's coming off the bench. No, Bowen might think, and showing that he can hit 6 threes, showing that He's so agile and quick and can really explode on the fast break. Brian Bowen maybe gives a little bit of a testament to he's not a strict small forward, where, as I think Miles Bridges much more so is somebody who you want to stick him at that three spot and you know that's where he plays. He's not playing anywhere else. And that's not a knock against Miles Bridges. In some ways, it's a compliment. It's good to know where you're going forward. But at the same time, Brian Bowen, I mean, he's got a very versatile game. Like I said, that jump shot is silky. It looks good. He gets great lift on it. He can pull up. He can drive. He's got both hands in his repertoire. There's a reason why he's one of the most highly coveted players in the country. But that he thinks that maybe he could slide in at that shooting guard position, that's interesting. Now, going on to Arizona, because as I mentioned, they're in a similar position where a lot of people expected Alonzo Trier, who's a sophomore this past year and this current year, he'll be a junior next year. Everybody thought he was going to the draft too. I think he would have probably been a lottery pick, probably around the 12 to 14 slot. He's a kid with a great jump shot. And he's really a vocal leader for that team as well. When I've seen him on the court, he's very passionate. I was surprised in many ways that he even stayed as long as he did. But he's more of a shooting guard slash small forward. And yeah, I was shocked that he decided to come back to Arizona. He averaged 17 points this year, 5 rebounds, and 2.5 assists. I thought that he was going to chuck up the deuces as well and say, see ya, because he's got an NBA-ready game. He's coming back to Sean Miller and that Wildcats program. So on Zona, Bowen said Coach Miller and his staff were great people. They have another assistant spot now. He really stresses the amount of NBA guys that they got and all the guys that they have going to the league in the wing position. I play the wing, so it's a big deal. With that, playing with Trier could be a great team, and DeAndre Ayton as well. Bowen's not shy when it comes to competition. Obviously, he's very confident in his own abilities to play with these guys, to play side by side with them, but to also get his on those teams. I mean, many prospects will kind of say, oh, you've got that position covered, I'm going to look elsewhere. And shoot, it's a smart way to go about things. If you've got competition and your job is to make the NBA and you just want to be a one and done, hey, go get your money, play an impressive year, and make the leap to the pros. There's nothing wrong with that. But Brian Bowen, like I mentioned, 26 points in that all-star outing. He seems to have a little bit of a different mentality. And being from Saginaw, I'm sure being in touch with Miles Bridges, and as he said, Coach Izzo's been recruiting him for 4 straight years now. There might still be a move in the offing. And I said it on Friday after Bridges re-signed with MSU. If MSU's able to get Bowen or McCoy, who I'll touch on in a little bit, this is the runaway favorite for a national championship in the nation, bar none. And that's a scary prospect, because even though you're a young team, now you still have that sophomore difference. And these sophomores on the team have grown together, all the difference in the world. Now, the other only threat, in my opinion, to the candidacy of MSU and Zona, and I think still the most likely team for Bowen to opt into, is Creighton. Creighton, of all teams, the Blue Jays, where Doug McDermott went and made himself famous, and a team that's been quite stout for quite a while now. But at the same time, Crane's a small school, and Bowen was asked if that bothered him, if he wanted to play in a Power 5 conference against the very best in the world. And he said, quote, not at all. Last year, Big East team, Villanova, won it all. This year, they had the biggest percentage of teams in the tournament or something like that. But no, not at all. They're on the rise right now. Honestly, a lot of people are sleeping on that conference. But it's truly a great conference. Coming in and scoring the ball is the biggest thing for them. That's really what they need, scoring the ball. They've got a couple of pieces that they've got, a couple shooters, and being a 1-2 punch with Marcus Foster there, it's a big deal. Bowen knows about Creighton, and like I said, this is where I wholeheartedly expect him to go. And even if he didn't, I think it really is in consideration for him. And Actually, Jeff Van Gundy said something last night on an MSU telecast, or excuse me, an NBA playoffs telecast, which I just thought was misguided. He was saying a lot of players now jump ship from smaller programs to go pro, and first they try to make the stepping stone of going to a Kentucky or a Kansas or an MSU or wherever it might be. And there's some truth to that, but at the same time, I mean, shoot, look at Aaron Harris. It's not like he jumped ship from a smaller program. Ben Carter coming from UNLV, that's not a small program either. It's not really the small schools are that are being hurt by these movements of a bunch of freshmen creating and forging a super team. It's really the mid-level schools in my mind. But smaller schools, Middle Tennessee State, they didn't have anybody jump ship. In fact, they added a couple of guys who previously weren't even on the roster. And that's why they were able to attain the first round upset. So there's this general trend in my mind, and you saw it with CJ McCollum, Damian Lillard for the Trailblazers, where players feel like, because of the proliferation of ESPN, because of the constant nonstop media firestorm that surrounds each college basketball team. I mean, just making a playoff round of 68 spot now garners you an ESPN television slot, and it garners you Twitter's attention and all of that stuff. Everybody can be noticed everywhere. That's just how it goes right now in college basketball. So do I think that not going to the SEC, not going to the ACC, not going to the Big Ten, the Big 12, the Pac-12 is going to be a deterrent for Brian Bowen? No, I don't. And that's why I expect him to go to Creighton. But the thing is, those seem to be the three schools he's keying in on. At the same time, Texas is recruiting him pretty strongly as well. Would not shock me just because of the return of Trier and Bridges. But at the same time, I think Texas is clearly in that four slot right now. And on NC State, he had this quote: "I finally talked to the new head coach, Coach Keats, Kevin Keats. He's a great guy. I haven't got to learn about his style, really. His track record has been pretty good at the schools he's been at." Yeah, so NC State, they're out of it. He doesn't know anything about the program, plain and simple. But Brian Bowen, do you think he's coming to MSU? And is it really that possible? Because his quotes were quite praiseworthy, if you ask me, how he emphasized the pluses and minuses of each program. And he was very laudatory about each one as well. It's not as if he pretended or feigned knowledge. He really knows what's up with all these places. He's not afraid of competition. So if you think he's coming to MSU, give me a call. If you don't think he's coming to MSU, give me a call, 517-355-9527. Just 10 minutes left in the show, though. So I want to touch on one more player in this game really quickly, and that's not Jaren Jackson Jr. Like I said, these are all-star games. Sometimes the more quiet-type players, and it's not to say Jaren Jackson is a quiet player. He can do all sorts of things. He's not always the posterizer, though, and he's not necessarily the big name right now in the media that Brian Bowen is, because he's already made his decision. The thing with Jaren Jackson Jr. is he's actually all settled in, set up for MSU, very versatile. He's a 6'10 power forward with guard-like skills. His dad in the NBA, well-documented, won a championship with the Spurs, averaged about 10 points in his career. And he had a good performance, Jaren Jackson Jr. now I'm talking about, at the Nike Hoop Summit, 13 points, 10 rebounds, beat the world select team. He doesn't really have much to prove right now, so I don't want to focus any more on him than the brief summary I gave you. However, Brandon McCoy, that kid will look good. And he as well is considering MSU, and I think he'd have more of a slide. I think Nick Ward is much more of a natural power forward at that position. I think he doesn't necessarily have the size or the post defense to keep up the verticality rule or deter a bunch of players like Frank Mason, Josh Jackson, as we saw in the second round of the NCAA tournament, from coming into the paint. Brandon McCoy definitely does. He's got what it takes to be a pure center. Again, might be a one and done, might be a two and done, though. And he had a great showing at that game, 215 points and double digits rebounds as well. What we're going to do, though, is hit our second break. And right after that, talk a little bit about the Michigan spring game. Talk about why maybe they're my weekend winners. Just a sneak peek of that, as well as the NBA playoffs, because it was a very, very noteworthy first round and first pair of games for the NBA. So we'll talk about that all and so much more. Call in 517-355-9527. You're listening to WKR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Marin. Just 7 minutes left on today's hour, and we still got time for a quick phone call if you want. 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-WKR. But busy weekend all across sports. First, we're going to talk about the NBA playoffs to close off today's show, because it was really an interesting first round. First off, I want to express my sympathies for Isaiah Thomas, the Boston Celtics guard who's inspired so many with his play on the court, his demeanor off it, and who just went through a tragedy that nobody on the face of the earth should have to go through. When his sister, Chyna Thomas, was killed in a car accident, Isaiah Thomas still played over the weekend, was visibly upset before and during the game against the Chicago Bulls on Sunday, and he still battled through, scored 33 points, 5 assists, but he was emotionless throughout that game, stoic on his face. He was not playing for basketball. He was playing for a lot more. They fell to the Bulls, but honestly, this is a Boston Celtics team with years and years of future performances and future possibly championships ahead of them. If Isaiah Thomas has to miss two or three games to cope with the loss, if he's got to go back to his family, nobody should criticize him whatsoever. Charles Barkley had some comments that were poorly phrased, but well-intended, actually, saying that he felt awkward seeing Isaiah Thomas even on the court yesterday. Of course, poorly phrased, because that shouldn't make you feel awkward. I mean, the guy's going through so much. That's on you to deal with it, because he's dealing with so much more. Anyway, Charles Barkley, though, I think he meant to say pretty much, could you imagine being in a situation like that where the game is obviously so tertiary, so secondary to actually being on the court when you know your family is struggling through that? So that's a definitely down note. And Isaiah Thomas, like I mentioned, 33 points. He still played an incredible game of playoff basketball and did what very, very few could, and we're hoping for the best of them. Again, rest in peace to Chyna Thomas, and hopefully Isaiah Thomas is able to find some sort of peace and manage to keep playing through this playoffs. In other news, John Wall, incredible. 31 points off assists, second only to LeBron James in game ones, and Wall was just entirely a different beast for the Hawks to handle. I said I thought that the Wizards would run away with this series. Run they did. They just outran the Atlanta Hawks in transition, and the difference was Marcus Morris, the Pistons forward, was actually in attendance, repping his twin brother's jersey and a couple gold chains as well throughout the course of that game. And boy, Markieff made him proud. Markieff was the difference maker, really giving four-time All-Star Paul Millsap something to handle with. Bobby Portis, also in the Bulls game, making a difference. One of two young players, Bobby Portis, I believe is a sophomore, who came in and made instant contributions. Also, Thon Maker with the Milwaukee Bucks, who just went on a tear. Block, jump shot, block, assist. He looked like a young Kevin Garnett out there. And I'm not afraid to say that. Not saying he will be Kevin Garnett, but that's what he looked like. Also, Doc Rivers. You can only think of so many creative ways to say the seat is hot, but because the seat is simmering for Doc Rivers. They lost game one at home, Utah Jazz. I still think the Clippers win the series, but the thing is, that would not be such an embarrassing loss if Derek favors was not the difference maker in that game. I mean, he was really a former third overall pick, if I'm not mistaken, but he had to step up in the absence of Rudy Gobert, who went down just 17 seconds into the game with, I believe, what they're calling a sprained knee and a bone bruise. Again, the Jazz still come away with it. Had a real problem. Last game I want to talk about, Pacers versus Cavs. Real problem with the comments of Paul George, star player for the Indiana Pacers, right after that performance where he said, you have to take the last shot. Pretty much, I have to take the last shot. Not you do. I mean, pretty much me, nobody else. Otherwise, it's not a good look. The thing is, he passed the Alva double team to CJ Miles. 4 seconds left. Miles pump fakes, gets the defender in there. Manages to slither around him, takes the shot, decent look, goes off the rim. They lose the game to the Cavs after a really great, closely contested matchup. Thing is, Paul George was double-teamed, and if CJ Miles tries to get that ball back to him, good chance the Pacers don't even get a shot off. Other thing is, Paul George, I'm not going to take credit for the stat. I heard it from Chris Broussard. Paul George, in his career, 0 of 15 in last-second shots, 20 seconds are left when the Pacers are trailing, and it would put them ahead. 0 of 15. Yeah, Paul, you do not have to take that shot. Not at all. Finally, Draymond Green is a weekend winner of mine. Some very big defensive plays for him throughout that game. Close to a triple-double, close to a 5-by-5 where you have 5 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals, 5 blocks. Draymond Green, one of the most versatile players in the NBA, and also... No music for weekend winners this time just because we're short on time. But Michigan football, Jim Harbaugh drawn out 57,000 people to a game. And the defense, you heard me say it in the quick hit headliners, a couple of defensive touchdowns. They look good again. Questions on the offensive line. Questions with Wilton Spade at the quarterback position. He looked anything but great. But the running game for Michigan will still eat them up. I think Ty Isaac looked good for me. And I think Michigan Wolverines have another great year in front of them. More than anything, the fan support's there. 57,000. Compare that to MSU. And boy, what a stark contrast of programs we have. You've been listening to WKR AM 870 and 94.5. Al Marin's back in the saddle tomorrow. I'm Isaac Constance. Thanks for joining me.